At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lundberg here, the world messenger, and I'm inviting you for another epic episode of Legacy Leader Show. I have here with me in the studio subject matter expert in cybersecurity and technology, of course, but who is also author, has a phenomenal books written and opportunity for everybody to learn, who has been featured in USA Today, who is also cybersecurity readiness, holistic and high performance guru. And he can share some of his approaches and tactics that can help either small or large enterprises. He's also playing very much so in private and public sector and so much more. But interesting thing is he has his own podcast, everything related to cybersecurity. And without further ado, let me introduce you to Dr. David Chaturjaya. Welcome. How are you doing, David?
Well, thank you for that very kind introduction, Isabella. I'm doing great and great to be on your show.
I'm so glad that we pinned you down and got some time to really address some of the major shifts that we're seeing. Obviously, looking what just happened during this year alone, we're approaching obviously the third quarter. We're seeing crazy stuff happening. And do you mind giving some of your valuable insights? What are you seeing? What is happening? And some of the tactics that you can share with us.
Sure. So, obviously, we recently experienced the global IT outage. Though it wasn't security, it wasn't a breach, but it was, as people know, that they were trying to, implement a patch, but that didn't go well. And in the process, it led to some major malfunctions across the board, affecting numerous industries, especially healthcare. Yes. So when that happened, I was taken aback. The reason I was taken aback is I didn't realize how interdependent the systems had become globally and how reliant organizations were on one platform. In this particular case, let's say it's the Microsoft operating system.
Yes.
And that begged the question, didn't organizations foresee a possibility like this? And didn't they have a backup plan or a disaster recovery plan, a business continuity plan? Now, it's always easy to play Monday morning quarterback and criticize, which doesn't serve a purpose. As you mentioned, in my book on cybersecurity readiness, I present a comprehensive, holistic framework, which is anchored on three, what I like to call the high performance information security cultural traits. And they are commitment, preparedness, and discipline. Each of these traits are associated with a set of success factors. And these have been empirically derived. The point I make through that framework is that unless an organization is keeping track of these different success factors and trying to do the best they can to realize them, whether it's from a commitment standpoint, whether it's from the preparedness standpoint, whether it's from the discipline standpoint, they're going to have challenges. So how is that applicable in the context of the global IT outage? From a commitment standpoint, I would like to believe that there has to be top management, active involvement and oversight, where they need to be asking the hard questions that, have their CISO and the team come to them and tell them, okay, share with us some destroy your business type scenarios. What could go wrong? say security-wise, that could totally get us off track? And after those scenarios have been spelled out in detail, the next question would be, so how prepared are we? What are our weaknesses? Where can we do better? What are our soft areas? This is the kind of dialogue that needs to happen on a regular basis that involves top management. And that's a reflection of commitment. And there are many other factors. I won't get into that level of detail at this point. Then I shift to the next anchor, or the next dimension, which is preparedness. And when I think about what happened, when I read about the media reports, were the organizations really prepared? Did they have a backup plan? Did they have a recovery plan? You know, could they have turned off certain systems, switched over to their backup systems? You know, what was the level of preparedness? This almost seemed like a mini pandemic that happened and got and had a worldwide impact. And you know what my worry is, Isabella, is we know that the nuclear installations, the critical infrastructure, are being attacked, or they're fending off attacks on a day-to-day basis. If they were to get compromised, and given the level of system interdependencies that we have that was exposed through this attack, I shudder to think the catastrophic implications of attack of that magnitude. So let's use the global IT outage as, you know, as a motivator to reevaluate from an organizational standpoint, how prepared are we, and what can we do better? And that leads me to the third anchor, which is discipline. You know, it's great to have best practices, guidelines, but are we practicing it as a company on a regular basis? You know, are we really practicing cyber hygiene? Are we disciplined enough to follow through with the compliance requirements, but in a substantive manner? Yesterday, I was talking to the CEO of a company, Radical Security Company, and he made an important point. And he says, Dr. Chatterjee, it's not about checking the box of the regulatory compliance requirements. And we were talking in the context of small and medium-sized businesses serving the defense and critical infrastructure. So he was basically saying what he has experienced, that they are great at checking the box. Somehow, let's meet the criteria or criterion so we become eligible for government contracts. But what needs to happen is, are you doing them well? Are you really following through with establishing the controls? Are you testing them? Are you retesting them? In this particular case, going back to the global IT outage, you know, a patching has become a regular phenomenon right now. It happens on a regular basis. To a great extent, probably the process is automated. But when you know that the implications of a bug or a malfunction can have such impact, do not totally automate the process. Have some human intervention. Or maybe, you know, do a pilot test, try it on one or two organizations. If everything goes well, then launch it in a large scale. Again, I will again say that easier said than done, but the reality of it is we are in an environment where the hackers, the perpetrators are constantly looking for loopholes. And there are many, too many of them. As you very well know, despite our best efforts, there will still be loopholes. So we have to be constantly on the alert and essentially develop what I like to call a security paranoia mindset, whereby we are constantly thinking about the security aspect of any initiative. However strategic and important it might be, we need to evaluate the security implications before moving forward. So I want to conclude this this particular remarks to this particular question by saying that I encourage organizations to look at cybersecurity as a strategic opportunity, not as a cost of doing business. Because if you take a strategic approach to cybersecurity, if you embrace cybersecurity as a value proposition, as a core value proposition, as a strategic competency, your level of commitment will change and the organization will find ways of developing cybersecurity capabilities that will enhance its value propositions, give the organization a competitive edge. So that's what I would encourage organizations. Be proactive, treat cybersecurity as a strategic competency, and be constantly providing oversight, constantly monitor.
Brilliant. I'm so glad you are able to walk us through and explain that in such a great way that I'm sure everybody watching and listening on this episode of Legacy Leader Show are very much so intrigued, and it's on top of their mind because a lot of leaders are obviously struggling to figure out what they can or should do and where they're at. And many organizations, just from strategic advisory roles that I've been in and seen so many companies that really don't have a clear pulse of where they're at, where their weaknesses is, because they don't have cohesion just alone in C-suite, let alone across the organization, right? So that really then kind of cascades throughout everything that they do. But everything you shared, obviously, it is alarming. And this is, as somebody said recently, just the beginning. It's more to expect incidents and events of this nature, because as you mentioned, we can't have things on autopilot, automated, without human critical thinking, but also, as you said, testing in preparation. But let's, if you don't mind, David, share a little bit about also how did you arrive to this amazing expertise that everybody should definitely know about, obviously not only based on education and years of working in the industry. I'm curious, how did you really niche in specifically in cybersecurity and why?
Well, great question. So, you know, it goes back to, I think 2013, 2014, you know, I've been an educator for a long time. I've been teaching information technology management. I've been teaching at the executive level for a very long time, engaging with industry, helping companies to make strategic use of technology. It dawned on me that strategic use of technology must take into consideration the different types of risks that are associated with it. And cyber risk was gaining momentum. You know, it was happening sporadically, but it was happening on a very consistent basis for me to come to the conclusion that we are experiencing a cyber attack epidemic. Though it hasn't been touted that way in the media. Unfortunately, we wait for disasters to happen before it gets a massive coverage. But it was during that period, 2012, 2013, that I felt that cybersecurity was an area which needed a lot of help, needed minds approaching it from different disciplines. You would think that it's a very technical field. It's the computer scientists, the computer engineers. They will have the maximum impact, the maximum influence. It is not for the non-technical folks, not for the business folks. But in reality, cybersecurity as a phenomenon is so multidisciplinary, is so cross-functional. I would like to believe that almost everyone has a role to play. Yeah. That's why there's a very common saying out there that cybersecurity is everybody's business. So I felt that given my background, given my expertise, I might have something to offer in the cybersecurity space. So therefore, I focused my research in the cybersecurity area, started attending security-focused conferences, started learning more about the issues. And you know what's really neat about this world we are in is that when you show interest, when you show passion, when you show commitment, doors open. So though I have been an academic, but I have been a very practice-focused academic, industry was so welcome. Before I know it, I was part of an industry cybersecurity group. I was part of their CISO SWAT team. Organizations would approach me from time to time, CISOs, CEOs, to gain my insights, gain my thoughts. I'd be asked to come in and facilitate strategic sessions on cybersecurity governance. So I've had the opportunity of provide strategic advising in the cybersecurity space for years now. So that was happening, that I was authoring, submitting papers to journals, presenting my papers at both academic and practitioner conferences. Then comes the pandemic. And then it dawned on me that maybe there was a book somewhere there. And I did not want to write an academic textbook. I wanted a book that even practitioners would feel comfortable picking up and reading. And over a couple of hours, 4, 5, 6 hours, they should be able to get a good feel of what the messages are. So that was an endeavor in itself. But to cut the long story short, it took me about a year and a half to get it published. From conception to publication was about a year and a half. And that was a very enlightening, you know how it is. It is one thing to think, it is something else to write, because as you write, things come up, things have to be vetted. And, you know, coming from a rigorous background, I like to do things which are well vetted, it's substantive. And so I was being very rigorous and robust in my approach, which was appreciated by Sage, a very reputed publisher. And they were also very helpful within the editing process. So we got a good product out. And I have never been somebody who's I don't like to oversell stuff. I like to put it out there. I like to show up through my episodes, offering, I'd like to believe, thought leadership, intellectual content, and then just leave it there to simmer, as opposed to beating on people's head and saying, hey, my framework is the way to go, others don't matter. I don't like that approach. I feel there are lots of great frameworks out there. There's well-established, well-known frameworks such as NIST, ISO 27000 family, and others are perfectly fine. My framework adds another dimension, adds a leadership dimension, adds a cultural dimension, adds a behavioral dimension. But I'd let the leaders uncover it, discover it. I appreciate this opportunity to present my book, yet another opportunity. And so, you know, let it happen. Let it happen, because I believe it takes time.
Yes.
It takes motivation. It takes incidents before we really get organizations to say, you know what, we get it. This is not something to be outsourced and expect a team of cybersecurity specialists to solve. While there is a technical aspect to it, we are not there yet where we can totally trust a technology or a set of technologies to address everything, and we don't have to worry about a thing. If that were to happen, that would be amazing. But unfortunately, we need that ideal combination of the right people, the right processes, the right technology. And we need to constantly monitor that mix, manage that mix to combat cybersecurity. Organizations will be behind compared to the perpetrators, because that's their business. That's how they make money. Most of the organizations are there for other purposes, but they can't ignore cybersecurity because, like I said earlier, if you ignore it, if you get hit, especially if you are in the small or medium business sector, you'll go bankrupt. 60% of SMBs have gone bankrupt when they have experienced a major hit. So therefore, it is in the interest of organizations to recognize the severity of this pandemic, of this epidemic, and do the best they can. So that's why I got really passionate about it. And I said, you know what? It's almost like I'm trying to do my part to make the world a safer place. In my own sphere of influence, leveraging my own expertise, and whenever the opportunity presented itself, like this opportunity I have with you, it just happened. It wasn't orchestrated. It just happened. And I'm a bit of a fatalist. I believe that things happen for a reason. So I believe that if my work is good, it has, if it is gaining traction, people will benefit from it. So that's how, Isabella, the work has happened. And I tell you what, I literally let things happen. I don't try to push it. My goal is when work comes to me, I do the best I can. And then I just rest for the next step to happen. So that's been my approach to security as well as other aspects of my professional life. And it's been a great journey. I've met some amazing people through my podcast. And, you know, I'm so happy I do the podcast. Initially, it was pitched to me by a student, an undergraduate student, who said, Dr. Chatterjee, your book is coming out. Do a podcast to promote the book. I wasn't very convinced. I said, social media and myself, we don't really go together. I don't really get it. I don't want to be out there all the time just talking. He said, no, Dr. Chatterjee, give it a chance. If you don't like, stop it. So I committed to him that I'll do 8 episodes and that's it. I won't do another episode. So I'm about to publish the 70th episode. It's been around for 3.5 years.
Hey.
And it has just happened. My young boy, he says, Dad, what the hell are you doing this episode? Nobody listens to that stuff. I said, Victor, I have this instinct that I need to do it and I'm going to do it. If it means I will be the only one listening, so be it. That was the same approach I took with my book. I went with my instinct and I said, I'm going to write what I think needs to be written. And if it doesn't get published, and if I end up being the only consumer of that book, so be it. And you know, Isabella, that really pays off, because if you listen to your inner voice, if you listen to your instincts, and you don't wait for too much feedback, and you be yourself, define the problem the way you see it, address it the way it should be addressed, based on your experience, based on your knowledge, you will make a contribution. And so, as I was saying, you know, initially I thought the podcast episodes were a promotion of my book, but then I realized, no, it's a promotion of some amazing people doing amazing work. And I'm having the pleasure of presenting them to my networks, to my audience, in an educational manner, not as a product pitch, but they're contributing to enhance global awareness. So that makes it very uplifting. I don't charge any money. It is not sponsored by any organization. I actually pay to get those podcasts out. But I have a great feeling of satisfaction that I'm doing something which I think will help the global community. Many of the episodes I've heard are being used in the classrooms. They're being used as training materials in companies. You know, so that's kind of how it is evolving.
That is a fantastic journey, and thank you for sharing that. And I love what you mentioned, how important it is to really follow your guts and sticks, and then also do things that show and demonstrate that you're a lifelong learner, that you are consistently adapting and adjusting to new technologies, that you are byproduct of what you preach and what you teach. And a lot of leaders, both of us know, a lot of times are stuck in their mindset. They don't necessarily continue to learn. As a result, they don't make necessarily very good decisions. And sometimes these decisions, as we see, they're very evident publicly, not only with these incidents, with breaches of security, but also with their clients, with their talent and teams, and really shows. And unfortunately, as a result, we see so much unnecessary, as you said, issues to the point that some of these companies get bankrupt because of magnitude of incidents they're dealing with. And we need to figure out ways to protect. But for everybody watching and listening, did you had a chance to also discover, because Dr. Chatterjee is so humble, he obviously was teaching at University of Georgia, but also at Duke University. I mean, you've been through so many different institutions and then also dabbling so much into engineering and cybersecurity. And it's just so great to see your holistic approach to these solutions. But now, thinking of this, obviously, from cybersecurity readiness, and that we live in a very different era, right? What would be one single message to executive leadership? We know a battle that are happening with CISOs and CIOs and CTOs, but what happens with rest fragmented, specifically with Fortune 500 companies, C-suite in those decision making, what would you want them to hear as a one strong message to really revisit and maybe also rethink how they're changing and impacting cybersecurity in their own enterprises?
Yeah, great question. So as I said earlier, I feel that top management should not outsource cybersecurity. You know, the example I like to use to bring home this point is when you send kids to school, do you really outsource their education, or do you, as parent, also provide oversight? Because schools are there to serve a certain purpose. They have some speciality that parents may not. But they are not a substitute for good parenting. You have to provide oversight because they are your kids. They matter to you. You don't want them to fail. Now let's use that analogy in the context of an organization. It's your organization. You are the CEO. You don't want the organization to fail. You don't want the organization to earn a bad reputation because after a breach, it is found that the organization was grossly negligent. As a CEO, you don't want that. So therefore, you have to use your best judgment, ask the right questions, deploy the right people, have the right structure, and provide the necessary oversight. So you're keeping track. You know, at the end of the day, it is plain old common sense founded on a true commitment that I will not let my kid fail. I will provide the guardrails so that I can guide him the best I can until they have to fly, and they fly. In this particular case, I will provide the guardrails so the organization can be at a good trajectory from the standpoint of cybersecurity governance, cybersecurity management. And you said something very profound, that we have to be constantly learning. I know a CEO of a billion-dollar insurance company. When I was having a discussion with him on this topic, he says, Dave, not only myself, but even my cohorts at the C-level, they all have to undergo regular cybersecurity awareness training. We all have to up our skills. We just can't preach and ask everyone else to, you know, enhance their cybersecurity education. We can't put them through different types of tests if we are not willing to do it ourselves. So essentially, walking the talk. But once again, I want to be very clear, there is no expectation that you give up your CEO role, you give up your COO role, you give up your chief marketing officer role and do cybersecurity. Not at all. Just recognize that cybersecurity is an important piece of the value proposition, of the initiatives you're proposing, and make sure when you're having a discussion about launching a certain initiative, you are assessing the cyber risk just like you assess other risks. So it boils down to comprehensive risk assessment, risk management, and then when you're doing a comprehensive assessment, Are you taking into consideration cyber risk? One more thing I'm going to mention here is, Isabella, you are probably familiar with the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which was implemented many years ago to ensure that for, I'm going to put it very in a very plain English, that numbers were not being fudged. Investors were not being duped. So you state the financial state of affairs as honestly as possible. Legislation had to be passed to ensure that companies did that. I almost feel that there might come a time in the near future that legislation will be passed where if you are not doing what you're supposed to do, the consequences can be severe. But me as a CEO, I wouldn't wait for a legislation to make me act a certain way. I would proactively act the way I should act if I truly care about protecting data, protecting my customers, protecting my employees. I shouldn't need an external incentive to take these measures, take these actions. So that's why I said it's really a matter of a buy-in. Do you really understand, you recognize why security can be a major challenge, but also it can be an amazing opportunity?
That is so powerful, and I agree with you. We have tremendous opportunities here, but also opportunities to improve, opportunity to better regulate and be more preventative and proactive versus reactive, right?
Yeah.
And that is where we see, unfortunately, these negative implications affecting not only specific enterprises, but a creating domino effect affecting whole industry. And as we've seen based on the most recent incident, affecting so many industries around the world. And with that in mind, we need to, now that we know more, we need to do better. But with everything that you shared, Dave, you obviously have absolutely exceptional background, as we mentioned earlier, also how you arrived and became this such a trusted strategic partner and advisor, and specifically in cybersecurity, and as long-term, as a long-time life educator and learner. I'm curious, what's left in your bucket list besides this amazing education and finishing your doctorate, publishing the book and having great podcasts and sharing so much your knowledge and influencing future generations of the leaders and specifically technology space and cybersecurity? What's left?
Well, once again, you know, you're really speaking to very interesting subjects and topics. You know, in many ways, I'd like to believe I'm just getting started in many ways, because you know how life is. You grow, you evolve, and then you get to a point where you feel that you are now rightly, appropriately positioned to deliver greater value. I often ask myself, could I have done this 10 years ago, 20 years ago? The answer is no. Would I have liked to have written this book 30 years ago? Yes. Was I ready? No. So it's, again, it's a matter of letting your gut, letting your instincts drive you, and you keep at it, never drop the ball. Like, I love to publish. I love to give talks. I love to engage with practitioners. So there is nothing that I do that is work for me. And I've been very fortunate my entire professional career, whatever I have done, I have enjoyed, and I continue to enjoy. I never felt waking up a day in my life saying, oh, I've got work to do. You know, it's been such a joy educating the future leaders of the country. It's a huge responsibility. I take it as a great honor, and I hope I have been able to deliver the best I could. So, you know, I look forward to the next opportunity. Maybe I'll get an opportunity to work with you. Who knows?
Absolutely. You know,
I almost feel things happen for a reason. That's how my life has evolved. You know, take a step at a time. But whatever you do, do it well. I'm not a fan of fame or money or all that stuff. I am a fan of excellence. If I take on something, I need to do it the very best I can. And then let it be. Let it be. So, you know, Isabella, I don't know how many years I have left on this planet, but I hope I can keep at it and have a positive impact on the global community, however little way it's possible. But at least I will always try to give my 100%.
That is amazing. And that's amazing also legacy to leave behind, which you're already living and leading with, and brings to the closing question, obviously, what would you like for this chapter in your life be known and remembered for?
Well, I'd like to, like I said earlier, I would like to believe I have made a mark in the field of cybersecurity education, cybersecurity training. And, you know, I want to say something. I was a huge admirer of my father. In my eyes, he was a most dynamic practitioner, a great leader. He was a senior corporate executive. We lost him during the pandemic. The book is primarily dedicated to my father. So I always wanted to make him proud. And I always wanted to be someone that practitioners could trust, someone who could influence practice. In my resume, you will see I state as my objective, strive to have a transformational impact at a global level through the work I do with practice. So that's really the legacy I would like to leave behind, is I have been able to have a positive impact on practice.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.